Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:17 British Summer Time. Today is June 4th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week because it really has been quite eventful. If we start even last week, most markets found at least short-term support and rallied really quite impressively into the latter end of this week, to an extent that a large number of markets had rallied back up to test their 200-day moving averages. And today, this, as I characterized it last night, it really was then at a point: will they or won't they be able to sustain moves back above their 200-day moving averages? Will the short-term support turn into medium-term support, or will they fail at this level? And in that eventuality, look a little bit more susceptible to some additional downside. And that's exactly what we had in here today. In Asia this morning, the market was relatively sanguine, and we saw that most markets finished in positive territory. Or if they weren't in positive territory, they weren't down by very much. The Nikkei was down just 13 points. The Hang Seng was down 6 points, and on nearly a 20,000-point index, that's practically nothing. The ASX was down 0.81%, but the Indian market was quite a bit stronger in here today, as was the Indonesian market. But as we moved into the European session and into the US session, markets closed down by a relatively substantial margin. The DAX index formed a downside key day reversal in here today. It finished down on the day just under 2%. The IBEX in Spain was down 3.8%, and that's a new closing low for that market. The Greek market has returned all the way down to its March 2009 lows, and it's only a few points away from that area right now. On Wall Street, the S&P is closing down on the day 3.44%, the Dow Jones is down 3.16%, and the Nasdaq Composite's down 3.64%. Brazil backing away again from the 64,000 level and is down 2% in here today, which is 1,200 points, and down to 61,675. So there's a large degree of commonality right across these stock markets, and the chart patterns that are evident for a large number of them is that we've had this short-term bounce, and now we're starting to see that they're encountering resistance in the area of their 200-day moving averages, which would be the first area of potential resistance. So this would indicate that the anxiety that has been manifested in markets over the last few months is still very much in evidence. And because we're seeing so many of these stock markets failing around these levels, it does suggest that the risk of additional downside or further tests of underlying trading have increased. I was stopped out of my Nikkei long in here today, and I opened a DAX short. Now, the DAX has been a relative performer. It actually never really sustained a move below its 200-day moving average and has bounced rather well from it. But if we have the rest of Europe under pressure, I don't think that the German market is going to be immune from that, even if its exporters will benefit over the medium term from that weak euro. That's probably not enough to stop the market from declining in the short term. The wider market does look weak in here because it has failed now at this 200-day moving average. So this was it. Most markets found support where they needed to, having become overextended 2 weeks ago, and they've rallied, and now they are encountering resistance at that first area of potential resistance. And that type of action is relatively characteristic of weak markets. So there is now a stronger likelihood that we are going to see some additional downside. And countermanding upward dynamics would now really be required to offset scope for some further downside. And of course, the oversold condition that had developed 2 weeks ago has been unwound to a certain extent by the rally that we've had. So markets aren't nearly as overextended on the downside as they were when they began to rally a couple of weeks ago, which may suggest that there is room for them to decline a bit further from here. In the commodity complex, the oil price is down $3.52, and the industrial metal complex was really quite weak in here today. Copper was down 14 cents, down to $2.80. Nickel was down $725, down to 17,950. It broke through the $20,000 level earlier this week and has really deteriorated quite quickly. The laggard in the sector, which has been lead, also broke downwards in the middle of the week and has been down on consecutive days now. So most of the metals in the industrial metal complex are looking quite weak and extending medium-term downtrends. The exception, and it has been a leader throughout, has been tin, but that is also unlikely to be immune from the selling pressure that's going on in these industrial metals. Natural gas in the energy complex is a little bit of an exception. It broke upwards yesterday and it improved upon that performance, although it didn't hold its gains into the close. But it broke above this $4.50 level yesterday and closed out today at $4.79. And it does look like it has further room to move on the upside and may benefit from a return to interest in natural gas by virtue of the very emotive response that has happened as a result of the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Elsewhere this week, the euro has continued to be weak. It's lost a little bit of its downward commonality, so it's not falling nearly as quickly against the Australian dollar as it has been, for example, but against the US dollar, against the British pound, it remains weak, and it broke downwards against the pound and hit it must be 18-month lows against the British pound this week. So that continues to be a cause for worry among investors. And the news that drove up the anxiety level in here today was that Hungary refused to dismiss the potential that it may default on its debt. And we're seeing that CDS spreads are starting to push back up, but in those Eastern European countries, they have broken upwards from little bases, particularly the Hungarian one, and there's a number of its neighbors aren't really very far behind. So the problems that began in the Eurozone periphery have expanded out to the EU periphery, into Eastern Europe, and this debt problem that we have in Europe is likely to rattle on for quite a while, at least in partly as a result. You had the safe havens of the US dollar rallying and the yen rallied in here today, but you also had treasuries rallying, and the 30-year was up by two full points and 12 ticks, and the 10-year was up by a full point as well, and a bit more. So US Treasury's back at 124. That's still below the high, but today's upward dynamic suggests that we may go back and test that high, whereas German Bunds are up to 129.39 in here today, up almost a full point and breaking upwards, touching a new high for this move. So certainly the German Bund is receiving quite a lot of attention from Eurozone investors looking for some sort of safe haven on the bet that the Bund will still be around in the event of the worst case scenario unfolding. There's an important aspect about all crowds, particularly crowds that stay together for a significant amount of time, and That important aspect is that they accept contradiction by definition. So during the tech bubble, people used to say that earnings don't matter, and of course they do. And in the credit bubble, you could have said that risk didn't matter, but of course it does. And the contradiction on which the euro was based is that you can have a single currency but 16 different fiscal policies. And that contradiction is being tested in here in no uncertain terms. The fact remains that, well, the strong likelihood, I think, is that this crisis is going to end either with more than one currency or considerably fewer fiscal policies, and potentially both. So we aren't at the end of this euro crisis, and it continues to put pressure on investor sentiment and on markets. But it is largely a European problem, and the stock market performance that we see elsewhere shows that whereas Europe really is lagging in here and has been one of the worst performing stock market areas over the since the beginning of the year, the USA by comparison has done really quite well in either euros or US dollars. So there isn't much of a push for US dollar investors to move outside of their own currency region at present because the US dollar has been a firm currency. Now, that's not particularly any reason why the US dollar is so firm, rather than by comparison with weak currencies elsewhere, particularly in the Eurozone and the UK. So the US is looking good by comparison. And another important factor that we've seen over the last week, and particularly since April, has been that the correlation between the performance of emerging markets and their respective currencies has broken downwards. So we continue to see that some of those emerging market stock markets have held on to their gains really quite impressively, but the US dollar has broken its downtrend against their respective currencies. That's putting additional pressure on their domestic stock markets to sustain these gains, and it's not out of the question that they're going to be able to do that. And then, of course, if it goes on for long enough, they'll attract some of these foreign buyers back into those markets. But with the declining sentiment that we have, and with Wall Street down over 3% in here today, I think it would be rash to assume that emerging markets are going to be immune from this kind of selling pressure. So, I think the balance of probabilities remains that we're going to see some profit taking in these emerging markets, and we've already seen at least some of that because these currencies have weakened against the US dollar, and that correlation was a successful lead indicator back in 2008. And if one were to look a little bit further back, that correlation was very much in evidence until 2008, and then sort of reasserted itself after the financial crisis, where both the stock market and the respective currency were appreciating at the same time. So that has deteriorated, and that's a further sign that we're in for a more difficult time for some of these emerging markets. Now, over the last year, we've been treated to a remarkable advance from really quite low levels. But the low-hanging fruit have been picked, and while there is a significant amount of cash sitting on the sidelines, we have an increasing wall of worry that is stopping people from putting that money back into the markets. And this euro crisis, and along with a number of other factors, including China's tightening, have got people scared, and certainly the appreciation of these safe havens is indicative of really quite a panicky environment among investors. But if we were to step back and have a look longer term, these are relatively, the euro aside, and the China's tightening is probably short to medium term factor, and the euro crisis is a short to medium term factor because it can't go on indefinitely. There is going to be some form of solution to this euro crisis, and it's likely to happen in the next year. I can't imagine that it's going to be rattling along for much longer than that because bond investors are pushing this matter to a head in no uncertain terms. The fact that you've had the stocks, Euro stocks banks index breaking downwards in here today suggests that these banks are being put under increasing pressure. And that is causing, that is likely to accelerate this problem. So the Eurozone crisis is not a long-term problem because it's going to be resolved one way or the other in, I think, the relatively short to medium term. The problems that are occurring today in the financial markets are not going to stop the billions, literally, of young people in the world's population centers, primarily in Asia and the Middle East, from growing up. They're going to require education, sanitation, housing, work, and their respective governments have little choice but to accelerate their attempts to provide those needs rather than wants for this growing population and quickly maturing population, hitting their prime growth and productive years. Because if they don't provide these people with what they need to improve their standard of living, then you're going to have widespread civil unrest. And if politicians want one thing more than anything else, it's to hold on to power. And it's widely accepted now that they have to push on with development, education, and modernizing their economies. Now, China has been well ahead in that regard and has urbanized at an incredible rate and lifted hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. And the process is underway in India as well, though perhaps not so advanced, but certainly the trajectory of the development is only heading one way. But it's not just limited to India and China. And while this problem that is currently ongoing in Europe, and we have, and the USA certainly has its own problems, these are largely problems of their own making and don't necessarily apply to the economies of Asia and South America, but Asia in particular because of those large populations and that internal demand story that is likely to drive the growth in their economies over not just the coming years but the coming decades. In which case, the any pullback that we have is like can be viewed as setting us up for the next big buying opportunity. The growth of the global middle class is a secular theme, and it's different from what we've had previously because in other major accessions of newly capitalistic economies, we haven't had multiples of the previous developed world's populations hitting the consumer market. But that is what's happening now with China and India coming onto the global scene. So demand for just about everything that could be consumed will continue to rise, even though the global economy will probably not be able to return to the kind of synchronized global economic expansion at the similar rate that we had before this crisis, because the USA and Europe are likely to have anemic growth for quite a while, although probably Europe more than the USA will be slower to take off. But that's unlikely to stop the emerging markets. And while they are under pressure at the moment, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're always going to be under pressure, and they have been leaders. So we can expect them to fall less. Some of the leaders certainly to fall less, but even if they have larger falls, they're likely to find support first. So even if one isn't investing in them, it is going to be useful to watch what they're doing because they will find support first if they're going to retain this leadership role. And they will be the first to break upwards from any bases that form. So emerging markets are keys to global growth and are this they're the prime area for the secular theme that is likely to drive the global investing market for much of the next decade. The underperformance of commodities right now, particularly industrial commodities, is probably in no small part due to the Chinese tightening measures that have been in place. But these industrial metals are also, well, they're prone to extraordinary volatility, and some of them have already pulled back into areas of potential support. So once they begin to find support, then they're likely back into potential buying opportunities as well, because some of the laggards, particularly zinc and lead in particular, have really had quite large falls already. So while those declines remain consistent, I'm unwilling to get increasingly bearish that the farther they fall, because that hasn't been a particularly good strategy over the last decade, and I don't think an awful lot has happened to change it just yet. When we look at shares such as BHP Billiton, which is still in relatively close proximity to its highs, it has pulled back and it has had a bigger reaction than we've seen in the advance since the end of 2008. And it fell below its 200-day moving average and it encountered resistance there again, with most others, well, with a great deal of other markets in here this week. So it's falling away from its 200-day moving average in the UK traded listing. So that also looks like a share that has some additional downside in its future. But it has also been an extraordinarily volatile share. So these larger pullbacks are probably not something that longer-term investors will be particularly worried about, and any major pullback can be viewed as a buying opportunity. Of course, some of these Australian shares or shares that have large operations in Australia have also been hit by this super tax, and that remains an open issue, which continues to be debated in Australia. One way or the other, though, I think we can assume that mining shares in Australia are going to be paying bigger taxes or more taxes, and that is likely to be something of a headwind in the absence of the industrial metals themselves being strong, and that's certainly not the case in here right now. So it does look like, along with stock markets, we're going to see some additional weakness in some of these mining shares. The gold market, having been below $1,200 in here this week, has rallied back, or sorry, in here today, I should say, has rallied back to $1,220, up 13 in here today. And gold is only $30 off its all-time high. So it continues to hold its safe haven status, although perhaps not as strongly as the dollar, yen, or US treasuries. But it's benefiting primarily from the debauching of currencies that continues to go on in global markets, with the Eurozone becoming increasingly likely to employ outright quantitative easing, and with the extent of the debt problems that exist in Europe, that quantitative easing could be really quite impressive indeed. So no country wants a strong currency, and there's a competitive devaluation going on where they are all, to one extent or another, attempting to keep their currencies lower, and they are attempting to stimulate their economies. And they are stealthily inflating away their debts, or attempting to at least. And those are all good reasons for holding gold, which readily where the supply of which can't readily be increased. So that is a sound reason for holding on to gold. And of course, gold has been particularly strong against weak currencies such as the euro and the pound, but only $30 off its high against the US dollar as well. And of course, the US dollar has been one of the stronger currencies, particularly of late. The Australian dollar is down a full 2 cents in here today, and down to 82 cents against the US dollar. And this has been really rather a large decline over the last few months. And it's been mirrored by the ASX 200. And both of those indices are now, well, both the currency and the index are both below their 200-day moving averages. And while they rallied somewhat in the last couple of weeks, with the currency pulling back rather violently in here today, that would suggest that we may see something similar on the Australian stock market on Monday. And that correlation between the performance of the stock market and the currency is in evidence in Australia as well. So this risk on, risk off type of environment that we've had for much of the last year is still very much in evidence. We can, of course, the counter side of that, now that we have risk off, safe havens have done spectacularly well. But when we get risk on again, and there doesn't appear to be any reason why that's not going to happen at some stage, then we can expect just about everything to rally in a consistent manner, and we'll see a high degree of commonality. 2 weeks ago, or what is it, about 10 days ago, we saw a large number of markets with upward dynamics, and that was a reasonably reliable signal that we'd found at least short-term support. And today we've seen that lots of markets have pulled back in a concerted fashion. And a high degree of commonality both in the stock markets and in the currencies. And that is also a reasonable trading signal. When this pullback has run its course, then there's a strong likelihood that it will end in a high degree of commonality across markets. And from an analytic perspective, that makes it less difficult to ascertain when markets are going to find support or when they're encountering resistance. But from a longer term perspective, if this does turn into a larger pullback, then it's setting us up for the next good buying opportunity in some of these fuller money long term themes, which are emerging Asia and the growth of the global consumer. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and wish all the best to all of you.